You've heard it said, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, but I tell you, do not resist an evil person. I wonder what you think of that on a day like this. On a day when we pause and remember those who gave their lives for freedom in what amounted to a European civil war. Who 25 years later gave their lives to bring an end to a Holocaust. In recent years, have given their lives for the cause of freedom in places as far-flung as Aden and Korea and the Falklands and the Gulf and Afghanistan. And a dozen other conflicts where oppressive regimes have sought to suppress freedom. Surely Jesus' words are inappropriate. Surely the instruction, but I tell you, do not resist an evil person, is a weak and ineffectual response. A response that leads to more oppression and less freedom. I used to think so. I used to think it summed up everything that the church stood for, or rather didn't stand for. Everything that made it powerless and ineffectual. That was until I came across some stuff that opened up Matthew 5, this portion of Matthew 5, and put Jesus' words into a cultural and historical context. And then I began to understand. You might say the light dawned or the penny floated gently to the ground as I began to understand what was going on here. Because this portion of Matthew 5 that comes towards the end of what we know as the Sermon on the Mount is Jesus using social etiquette, using the taboos of his time to create an upside-down kingdom, to turn the world on its head and to unmask evil powers for what they are. To reveal oppressive violence, to reveal the exploitation of the poor, to reveal the subjugation of the powerless for what it really is. In three short cameo, Jesus does what he's good at. He turns the world upside down. In a moment, he whisks the cloak of what's going on here, exposes what's going on here. In reality, rather than being a weak and ineffectual response to evil, Matthew 5, verses 38 to 48 is a powerful act of subversion. Turning the other cheek, giving your overcoat as well as your shirt, going the extra mile, is taking the norms of the day and using them to show up what life is really like. Well, the actions of turning the other cheek and giving your overcoat as well as your shirt and going the extra mile might seem countercultural in today's world, when Jesus is using them, it's a truly subversive act. It is truly undermining all that society stands for. Up until recently, I'd seen this as a countercultural statement, but nothing more. Not anymore. This is truly powerful. Let me explain why. Because the instructions we are looking at come both in Matthew's gospel and they come in Luke's gospel. They differ slightly in Luke than they do in Matthew, but the inference is the same. It is ultimately the humiliation of those who seek to act as bullies, to get their own way. The first of these instructions is, you have heard it said, an eye for eye, a tooth for a tooth, but I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other one also. Matthew is quite specific when he records Jesus' words. And this is because if you slap someone on the right cheek, It is to humiliate them rather than to injure them. It's to put them in their place. It's to show who's boss. However, to slap somebody open-handed on the right cheek, you'd have to use the left hand. But you can't use the left hand in first century Israel because that's the hand you wipe your bottom with. And to do that is to do something you daren't do. It's unclean. So that means you'd have to hit them backhanded. A backhanded slap is about putting someone in their place. It's about saying, I'm your superior. It's how you treat slaves. It's how you treat underlings. It's how you feel superior. So what happens if the person who you slap on the face turns up and says, okay, now do the other side? Suddenly you're in a problem. Because you can't backhand slap them, because that would mean using your left hand. We've already said, well, you can't use your left hand. So that means you have to hit them with your right hand. And to hit them with your right hand means you've got to give them a forward slap, which means it's something you do to an equal, not an underling. Suddenly the tables are turned. Suddenly the underling, the person you have subjected, you want to say, I have power over, suddenly you don't anymore. Suddenly, they're an equal. Describing the way that people interact with one another, Eric Byrne describes the way we act as the games people play. And he argues in a society we all play sociological games. And if you want to break the power of those games, of that interaction, you refuse to play by the rules. In this case, the cycle of violence. To break a cycle of violence, you have to refuse to play. When it comes to being involved in conflict, armed conflict between nations, the conflict of words between the churches or organizations, the conflict with another individual, I wonder if we have the courage not to play the game. One of the biggest fears in 1914 was that following the truce on Christmas Day, the soldiers wouldn't fight again. That they got used to not fight, they just didn't want to fight. So all sorts of propaganda, all sorts of things we use to persuade them to play the game, to fight. I wonder if we have the courage not to play the game. I wonder how we might take the norms of today and turn them on their head so we become a subversive people. Without violence, without aggressive words, without oppressive demeanor. And in doing so, reveal the true intentions of those who stand against us. The second example Matthew gives is similar. Someone takes your shirt, give them your coat as well. In Luke, it's the other way around. If someone takes your coat, give them your shirt as well. And the outcome is similar, whichever way you look at it. The instruction is given to people who are used to living with the pressures of owing people money. In the time Jesus is speaking, everybody owes the authorities money. Such was the nature of Imperial Rome that the taxes were unbearable. And to pay taxes, people first gave up their lands, and then they gave up themselves just to pay rent to their landlords, and then the taxes that squeezed every last penny out of them, and eventually meant they ended up in the debtor's court. And here, the only thing they owned, the only thing that could be taken from them, was their coat. Well, at least to a point. You see, the laws in Jesus' time forbade anyone to parade naked. It was a taboo to be naked. So what Jesus is saying, if you go to court and a person takes your coat, give them a shirt as well, then you end up being naked. And you walk from the court and can rightly say, look, they have taken everything I have. And suddenly the tables are turned. Suddenly the court that orders you to give up your shirt and your coat, and you give up your coat away as well, is the one who has left you naked. And suddenly you undermine the case of those who are pressing you. Such was the taboo of nakedness in the first century Israel. From a court, walking from the court naked, actually turned the tables, because actually it revealed what the person was who was taking you to court. It revealed their nature. It revealed that they were a bully. It revealed that they had no care for you. It revealed an awful lot about them simply by handing them your shirt and walking naked from the court. And it makes me wonder, I wonder what the taboos of our society are today. And I wonder how, as the people of God, we might turn them around and use them, that we might be a subversive people, a people who live and act differently, who use the taboos of our nation to reveal the powers that seek to oppress, that seek to suck the life from us, that seek to put us into a place we would rather not be. I wonder how the taboos of the nation we live in today might change the way we live in church, might reveal those who seek to strip us of our dignity. I wonder what taboo we might employ to reveal their position, their political maneuvering, their active aggression. Unmask them for who they actually are. Jesus' third instruction is to walk the extra mile. That's equally as subversive. You see, under Roman occupation, a Roman soldier could instruct a civilian to carry their pack. But they could only instruct them to carry it a mile. The regulations regarding forced labor meant a soldier could only force you to carry the weight of his pack for 1 mile. Anything more than that would open them up to a charge. Now, the punishment for a charge varied quite a lot. And it could be as simple as a deduction of pay. Could be death. More often, it was simply flogging. But so far as we can tell, the regulations were only laxly imposed. They didn't happen very often, but every so often a local centurion or local governor would get in his mind to bring home the regulations, make it true again, and he would enforce them with power again. And so you never really knew when you were going to be punished for a crime and when you weren't. That leaves you in a state of anxiety, never quite knowing when you're going to be found out or treated for when you're found out. So imagine what happens if you force someone to carry your pack for a mile and they say, no, that's fine, I'll go an extra mile. We'll go the second mile. Do you say, no, 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 leave it there? And what happens if they don't mention the fact they've gone the second mile? Suddenly you find yourself in a quandary, because now you've broken the rules. Now you're the one subject to a charge. But more than that, you're not. You're now in their debt. Because if they dare mention the fact that they've gone the second mile, you're in trouble. suddenly the tables are turned. Suddenly the one who is oppressing you is revealed for what they're actually doing. Suddenly they don't have power over you, you have power over them. I wonder what going the extra mile looks like today. I wonder what going the extra mile as an act of subversion looks like today. It was Winston Churchill who said that man was made for war and for gardening. Well, set aside gardening for the moment. Our human commission means we are naturally gravitate towards violent action. We do it as nations, we do it as organizations, we do it as church, we do it as individuals, we even do it as followers of Christ. The one who is the Prince of Peace. I wonder what we have to do to resist that urge. To resist that urge to seek to be one up on someone else. What if turning the other cheek, giving a coat along with our shirt, going the extra mile, are pointers, are ways of changing the way we think and we act, so that we no longer engage in conflict, no longer seek one-upmanship, no longer seek to put the other person down? What if a community of faith, gathering as those who seek to follow Jesus, we take up the challenge? Take up the challenge that is here in Matthew 5, but also in Micah 4, which I read at the beginning. If we learned not conflict, but peacemaking. If we taught each other not how to get our own way, but how to live in peace with each other, to learn what violence actually means, what aggressive words actually portray. I wonder if we chose to practice the art of peace rather than the art of conflict, what then? Well, right at the very beginning, I read from Micah 4, and the passage goes on to give a glimpse of the future of the kingdom, of God's kingdom. It's an end times passage. It speaks of a place of prosperity, a place where rather than manufacture the tools of war, implements are used to cultivate the land. A place where there's no fear of a neighbor might be plotting against you. It's a glimpse of God's kingdom and all its glory. But what if a little bit of that kingdom could be realized in the here and now? A few weeks ago, we had a BMS video, which we watched as part of Harvest. And as part of that, one of the speakers said, you know, one person influences a family. One family influences a village. One village influences a community. One community can influence a nation. What if he's right? What if the change began here? What if it began amongst us? What if we took the social norms and threw them out the window and said, no, we're not going to do that anymore. We're not going to play the game. We're going to reinterpret the taboos of our society and use them so that we might encourage one another in the act of peacemaking. I wonder what would happen then. I wonder if we took Jesus' words, you've heard it said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, but I tell you, don't resist an evil person. I wonder whether they might be more powerful than we first thought. Certainly I first thought. What if they're more life-affirming, more life-giving than they first appear? What then? And so it leaves me wondering if we have the courage to find ways to live like that. To live in the upside-down kingdom that Jesus brings. To be the followers he's called us to be. To be the peacemakers in a violent world, in a violent community. amongst aggressive individuals. Amen.